This spinoff of my Taking Back Birth podcast is called Walk and Talk. It was about time that me, Marin, and Indie Birth co-founder Margot got together in an informal, regular, talk show type format to talk about whatever's on our minds. We'll talk about the ideas and topics that bring us together as midwives, women, and best friends. Stay tuned as we literally walk and talk about whatever comes up for us in this episode. We welcome your ideas or suggestions too, so be sure to leave us a review on iTunes and let us know what subjects you want to hear.
Good morning again.
Good morning again.
Merry Christmas Eve, as we were saying. I don't know what happened there.
I don't either, but onward.
Onward. So what are we discussing today?
Well, last time we talked, we said we should maybe talk about fast birth.
Yeah, we haven't had a real birth-related topic yet. I was laughing how we were very proper with our first two walk and talks. They were very prenatal focused before we dove in, perhaps.
So my headphones just fell out, so I didn't hear what you just said. I'm so sorry.
We're having like a retrograde phone call today or something.
We are.
Oh,
I think I've solved it, though.
Oh, good. Well, let's just proceed. It wasn't an important comment.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we talked a fair amount about long births and preparing people for those. And we don't spend quite as much time on fast birth.
So why is that?
Well, I think there's perhaps a misunderstanding that fast births are easy.
Indeed.
Which I myself fall victim to, having been a long laborer. You know, I have moments of, like, thinking how nice it must be to not have a long labor. But attending fast birth and knowing people who have them, that doesn't seem to always be the case, that it's necessarily easy.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think there's a lot to be discussed as far as preparation in general, like as a midwife, and how are we preparing people? And I think we both probably err on the side of not wanting people to assume that their birth will be super fast just because
Right. It's
not the most common thing. And when someone hasn't birthed before, kind of the worst case scenario is that they're, you know, in early labor or something early-ish, and they somehow get it in their heads that a baby
Right.
is coming soon. It's very disappointing. So I guess maybe we're trying to spare people major disappointment in some cases, right?
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely it. And then, you know, even if fast births aren't necessarily easier, they typically are less, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? There's less to do for everyone involved. You know, like with a long labor, the mom has to put in a serious amount of effort to keep herself going.
Right.
And the midwife has to be mindful of that as well. Whereas with a fast birth, you know, it may not be physically easier for the mom, but it's logistically and it's easier for the support team, I think, would be fair to say.
Right. Well, that's true, but I think the element of surprise or being something that's unexpected factors in a different level of stress for the support
team. Indeed.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, like an an athletic event, right? It's like we like to prepare people, I think, for more of an endurance event, just in the event that they have kind of a more typical, not even super long, just like a normal length, especially for a first labor. But then when someone turns out to unexpectedly get more of a sprint, then, yeah, it changes things and they can be caught off guard and it's, you know,
the mental game changes.
Yeah. And as the midwife, you're stressing to get there, or maybe you miss it altogether, which is what's happened to me several times this year, which I'm happy to talk more about, just because that's definitely an element of fast birth. So sometimes, you know, people wind up with babies in places they didn't imagine, or people they didn't imagine there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be perhaps even traumatic in that sense, you know, just
sure.
being like, what the heck happened? And this baby just came out.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the maybe, I don't know if it's a downside, but a thing to be aware of for sure. And, you know, with our clients, I feel like, you know, typically they're pretty well prepared. They're a good fit for an accidental unassisted birth if it does end up happening that way. But, you know, it doesn't always end up like that. Or, you know, sometimes midwives are working with people that are really far away from that comfort level.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the people who are there or even the mom herself freaks out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like I said, I feel like I'm lucky in that I'm trying to think how many I've missed. But the ones that I have, I feel like have all been people that were totally fine. They were okay to handle that on their own. It wasn't scary. It didn't feel foreign to them as a concept.
Well, that brings up something. Is this a myth or is it something that is real? When someone has an accidental unassisted birth, so to speak, or, you know, a midwife misses it because it's really fast, I was always kind of taught, and I want to discuss this, like, is that something that's intentional, even if it's subconscious? Like, you know, is it really an accident, or is it what we're saying? You know, are these the people that are really okay with being alone and kind of don't call on time? Again, even if it's like a subconscious desire, what do you think about that? Is that a myth? Is that reality? Does it differ on the person?
I think it depends on the person, but you know, I feel like that's more realistic, perhaps as an explanation, when people are working with midwives who really feel like they have to be there, that like frown upon unassisted birth.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like people who maybe don't have
options. Like they can't be honest about it?
Yeah, that they're like really wanting something really low intervention, really low tech.
Right.
And they can't really find a midwife to support that. So they just choose sort of like the next best option, and subconsciously or not, think, okay, well, if labor's going smoothly, I'll just wait to call them till after.
Sure. Sure.
You know,
and
I think that makes sense. Yeah. That's what I would do.
Well, and I was going to say, don't we see a lot of that, like, on the Indie Birth Community Facebook group,
uh-huh.
for example, right? Like, a lot of women saying, like, is that cool? Is it cool to hire a midwife? And then not
right.
really tell her that I'd rather be alone and then just not call in time. And, you know, maybe that's getting us off track, but
I think
there were a couple of midwives at least that have commented on those kind of threads being like, hey, like, just be honest. But, you know,
right.
Not every woman feels like she can be. So I don't know. I don't know how that relates to the kind of people we're working with, because I think we do expect honesty, but it's also okay to not be adverse. Like, it's totally fine for people to decide,
right.
even when they've hired you, that they don't really need you there. So,
right.
you know.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's off topic, or maybe it's a subtopic. I mean, these are walk and talks after all. So
rabbit holes, yes.
Yeah, no, I always comment on those threads and say, hey, if I were your midwife, yeah, I'd really like to know and what your ideals are. But like you said, you know, not everyone feels safe to do that, or they, yeah. So I think it's important to keep educating the community and women everywhere about the possibility that there are midwives like us who wouldn't really care either way if they want to just be honest about it. Because it sort of just feels like this weird, it's not weird, it just feels very, like, rebellious, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, this group of women who are like, how can we sort of scheme to get the birth we want?
Yeah, totally.
And, well, I get that I think the next best option, I think the ideal scenario is to have a midwife or many midwives in your community that you can just have those honest conversations with, and that they can find the person that will provide the kind of support they want, you know, without anyone being uncomfortable.
Right. I think, I mean, I know you probably say the same thing. So, you know, I definitely say to people at least once, or maybe more times if it comes up in a certain way, like, hey, this is when to call. You know, here's how to make sure that I'm there if you really want that. But if you don't, that's fine too. And, you know, most of the time people are like, oh no, like we hired you and we do really want you there. But, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. And maybe, like I'm saying, it's more of a subconscious thing where it's like, yeah, we do want you there, but maybe not right when the baby's coming out. We're fine with you there afterwards too. Like, and they're just, right. You know, they're just finding that out for themselves. It's not like a deliberate plan to not have someone there. It's like, oh, we're comfortable and we'll call when we need to kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And then I think there is the other side of the coin, which is people that really do get surprised. And
yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, the classic scenario is somebody has a long or even normal first birth, you know, that's like 12 hours of active labor is the average, according to the textbook.
Right.
And maybe days of early labor.
Right.
I was looking back at the notes you took during Celosia's birth because she wanted me to take out her little box because she wanted to see her cord.
Oh, sweet.
We were looking at pictures of placentas and she was saying, where's my pock? And so for some reason, pock means cord.
She is so
and she was like pointing funny at her belly button, where's my pock? And I was like, oh, I actually do still have your cord.
It's yeah, that's
great
awesome
and cool. Anyways, so I was looking at those notes and, you know, my active labor was actually really average, probably. You know, like 12 to 16 hours, but the rest was long. And not really that much longer than many people. So where was I going with that? Just that people have a normal or longish first birth, and then the second time get super surprised when things move faster, no matter how much you prep them for it, you know?
Well, that's how my second birth was. I mean, I wouldn't say
tell us about that.
Well, I mean, my first was a hospital birth induction, so, you know, it was on the... It was normal length, but first birth. And then the second...
How long was it?
The active labor?
Well, like the whole thing. I don't feel like I know the answer to this.
The whole thing. My waters opened on a Tuesday night, but I wasn't in labor, so I can't really...
Right.
I would have to go back and think, but they induced me with Pitocin at 6 p.m., and she was born at 4 a.m., so 10
that's
hours.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was pretty good. But anyway, whatever. With the second, which was our first home birth, I don't know that it was less by hours, but the way it felt, like the intensity was different kind of at an earlier, you know, an earlier point than I had expected.
Right.
So not having experienced my own body being able to do it since the first was an induction, I really wouldn't have known when to call the midwife. So I can feel compassion for people that are honestly like, I didn't know when to call, even though we try and go over these things, we can't imagine every scenario. So if I hadn't had a doula with me, I did have a doula for my first home birth, and I started pushing, and I remember the look in her eyes. Like, holy...
I don't know that I've heard this part of this story.
Well, the longer version, and I'll just go off on it for, like, a minute because I don't want to blab. But I was in labor. I was in active labor, probably. And the midwife came over, and she was tired. She had just attended, I think, two births. And she said to me, you're not in labor. she had this crazy theory about, oh, your baby's just posterior, this is just practice. Of course, she was totally wrong. So she told me she was going to leave and go to another state. Another state.
Oh, dear.
Right. So she says, you know, we're in Chicago. She says, I'm going to go to Indiana to check on this newly postpartum mom. I'll be back. And she left, and I started pushing.
Oh, no.
So the doula freaked out. And like I said, I remember the look in her face, like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And anyway, Egan was born probably an hour after that. And the midwife didn't go to Indiana, so she quickly turned her car around and came back. But in my brain, I kept thinking, my rational brain kept thinking, there's no way I could have a baby soon. It's like last
right.
time, it took me so long. And I think this is a classic thought of people with, and I'm not saying this was a fast labor, but of people that have fast labors, they say to themselves,
there's no way.
Yeah, there's no way. Although the other part of their brain says, this is hard, and if it goes on like this, I won't be able to do it.
Right.
And I remember saying that too, that this is hard, and if this goes on all night, I'm not going to be able to do it. So, you know, your rational brain doesn't process. Well, duh, lady, it's because you're about to have a baby.
Right, because it's in disbelief.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess I do have more compassion than I thought, because she totally would have missed it if it hadn't been for the doula. Anyway,
right.
So, yeah, I think when you're comparing birth against birth, and, you know, that's not even including these women that are having fast first births, which is
God.
A couple of the ones I missed this year. Totally unexpected.
Really surprising.
Well, because they have nothing to compare it to.
Well, I have nothing to compare it to, and it's so hard as a midwife going back and, woo! Sorry, I almost fell down an icy cliff.
Please don't.
I'm turning around now. I'll just take a picture of where I almost fell off of. It's a little precarious. What was I thinking? Oh, just that, you know, it's hard for us as midwives when we're going from, you know, one birth to another, maybe not, like, super close together, but, you know, where am I going with this? So I'll back up for a second. I think it's going to be really exciting. We've been talking with Rick DeFries. She talked with our research methods class last week and myself, and totally inspired me and us now, right, Maren?
Yeah, I'm totally
on board. We want to start keeping our statistics for at least us two, and then hopefully eventually.
I think we should start that, like, ASAP.
I agree. Maybe when I come in to Arizona, we can go through all of the old charts, too.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Just to get a sense of, like, you know, are we accurately, like, are our anecdotes matching up with reality? Like, how many first-time moms are really having long labors versus fast versus medium-ish? And I think that would be useful just for, like, perspective sake, because it's just hard coming off of, like, you know, a five-day labor and then having a first-time mom call you and say, like, this is really intense, and, like, it just started, or, you know, whatever it looks like. And in your head, you're thinking, like, oh, boy, this is, all right, better clear my schedule for the next week.
That is an excellent point. I don't think people understand, like, if you're the birthing mom, you, like, just can't understand our sort of warped perspective because of that, because we go from
right.
one to the next, and people are so radically different, and births are so radically different that, like, our brains get confused sometimes. Like, what's happening with this person? It takes a lot of focus.
Right. And, you know, we do our best not to, like, put assumptions or judgments on situations, but I definitely would admit, like most midwives, to thinking most first babies are going to take a good long while, which we do have data to back that up. But that doesn't mean that there won't be people that have fast or normalish length birth, whatever that means, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like I am feeling blessed that I've had so many first-time moms this year. You know, even with sort of atypical scenarios, like, I'm not going to tell people's birth stories, but because this is at least a super awesome, braggy, triumphant story. The first-time mom that had a baby a month or two ago, that birthed a posterior baby, with an arm next to her face in 6 hours. Like, who would ever expect such a thing?
Such a thing.
You know?
Totally. Totally. That's what's so good about, like, having other midwives to connect with and hear these stories from, you know, because it's easy to get wrapped up, especially when we have small practices, and I'm only going to, like, a birth a month, to get wrapped up in, like, last year's 12.
Sure.
And it could be that it was totally random that, you know, whatever characteristic of the labors we're talking about. But, so a plug for the Wise Woman Circle, because I feel like we should utilize it even more than we have been for that reason, to share amongst each other and be like, hey, this is what I'm seeing, and to remember that there are all these variations that can exist, because the other side of the coin, maybe not even, maybe a separate subtopic then, is this trend I feel like I've seen. Maybe it's not even a new trend, but I feel like I've just been noticing more now that I'm out on my own as a midwife in, like, the free birth community, to sort of, like, Pollyanna approach everything.
What do you mean?
Like, with labors and stuff, you know, people just thinking, you know, just we have so many free birth stories that get shared that are positive, which is, you know, I think is a true reflection of it. I support
sure.
it totally. But, you know, people don't always share their not so awesome versions, or they like gloss them over, or I guess I'm not sure exactly what I'm saying, other than I've, you know, seen some bad advice being given around people being like, oh, if you're healthy, if you do everything right, you know, your birth will be fast, and then not knowing how to help each other when that isn't the case.
Okay, I have something to add there.
Okay,
and
good,
I think
that was a weird ramble.
Well, I think you'll totally agree with this as it pertains to your own birth experience, which is there is no formula to get a fast birth, people. Like, and I, you know, I love thinking about it, and I love thinking about how awesome my clients are and how smart they are and how connected they are and how healthy they are. And I would love to think that that means I could predict a super fast, easy birth for many of them or all of them. But the truth is, you know, I've been doing this for close to 15 years, and I don't feel any closer to predicting who gets what. So, you know, that doesn't mean it's not awesome to take care of yourself. Of course, we want women to eat really well. You know, all the things that I think midwives are great at and women are great at. Like, let's talk about your past. Let's talk about your, you know, sexual history. Let's delve into all the things we think we know that affect the length of a labor or birth. So I'm still advocating that we do those things, but I'm just saying honestly that I don't feel like there's a formula. And so if you get a fast birth, great. But if you don't, it's not because you screwed up.
Right. Yeah, and I think it goes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, I was sharing with you yesterday, too, that even after having many babies, with my seventh, right? Is ever the seventh? Yes.
Can't keep them straight.
I know. Well, sometimes I mess up the numbers. But so my seventh birth, I feel like, you know, first, second, third birth, they're not predictable, but there's sort of more of a textbook way they can go. And this could just be because, you know, most women don't have a seventh baby. We don't really have, like, tons of data on that kind of stuff. But, you know, by the time you get into your seventh baby or later, there is sort of like a heightened level of unpredictability, I feel, even though your body has done it, you have confidence. And so with my seventh baby, my waters opened at 10 o'clock at night, and I was having contractions, and I remember feeling like, oh yeah, okay, I'll have a baby tonight, and got all ready and woke up the next morning, although I had been up all night contracting, and was severely disappointed. So fast forward, laboring all day, all night, 24 hours of labor for a seventh baby. And then when she was actually about to be born, I was sort of caught off guard. I was in this, it was probably one of the first times in my own births that I left my midwife brain. Like, I had given up. I was so frustrated and disappointed. And anyway, the short version is, right, like, I texted you, like, literally 5 minutes before she was, 10 minutes? I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes before she was born. So anyway, I guess that gives me more compassion, too, for women.
But even,
like, yeah.
But even that text message was not, hey, I'm about to have a baby, come over. It was, oh, Diane's coming up from Phoenix. You can come when you want. Something like that.
Well, but I really, what I emotionally remember most is I wanted you there. Like, something was happening, but my brain wasn't registering.
Couldn't translate,
Yeah, like, it's not like, Marin, you're going to have a baby. It was like, oh, poor me. Where's Margo? I need her to hold my hand.
Which I feel like is similar to Deva's birth. Like, I felt like you didn't have, like, a concrete sense that you were about to have a baby with her either, but maybe I'm just, you know what I mean? When you're like, I don't know what's happening.
Totally. Well, I think that that brings up what I think could be a rule of thumb, if there was a rule of thumb, which often there's not, is somebody that's had a lot of babies, if they're laboring, and especially if their waters are open, like, go over there, like, because they're not going to have time to call you. And for some women, that's their third baby or their fourth baby. You know, their waters are open, they're contracting even 20 minutes apart, and they're strong. If they want you there, which, of course, key point, just go be there, because it will get to the point quickly where no one's going to be able to call you. So if I ever have another baby, that's why you have to live with me.
That's right. Just live in your basement.
Oh, man. But anyway, I'm babbling, because that's not the first baby scenario, which I think the two that I've missed lately have been first-time moms, which I think is better to focus on that, since it's, I don't know, more typical?
More typical to miss a first-time mom?
Or more I don't mean that. I guess I mean it's less typical to be attending probably a seventh or eighth baby. It's more typical to be attending a first baby. And yes, very unexpected to miss them, though, you know? Like, what's going on in those scenarios? You know, when we teach, you know, in quotes, teach people, like, when to call, like, how can we encompass every scenario they might run into?
Right.
Like, what do you tell people? What's that discussion look like?
Geez. Well, I mean, I feel like I have it a lot of different times. But, you know, I used to shy away from the more mainstream advice of, like, the 5-1-1.
Right.
But,
well, explain
but
that
I find,
for people that don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, contractions 5 minutes apart, lasting a full minute. What's the other one?
For at least an hour, probably.
Oh, yeah. There we go. For at least an hour. Especially with a first baby, like, I feel like that's, generally speaking, a good rule. And even then... Not being in a rush to get over.
Well, right. What if it's 24 hours from there?
Right. And so, you know, then there's the conversation about, like, how much do they want you to be listening to the baby or not? Or, you know, how is her support system and all of that. But that's, I feel like, a good general guideline for first-time moms. For second-time moms, I feel like it's just... you know, the conversation's a lot less concrete. It's more like, when you think it's getting intense,
yes,
like, call me no matter what the pattern is.
Right. Even if there's no pattern, which is so typical for,
and,
you know, a subsequent baby. And even if they're, like, 20 minutes apart.
Yeah, and I usually try to say something that preps them, and I don't know how well it works or not, but what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, if... even if you think there's no way I'm having a baby soon.
Right.
If it's intense, call me and I can come hang out or be nearby if I'm far. And, you know, because, again, there are people that break this rule, but generally wimpy contractions don't push a baby out.
Right.
I feel like that's one of the stronger rules, is, like, you know, people generally are in a fair amount of discomfort before a baby's actually born. How long that is, we don't know. But, you know, I even, like, kick myself sometimes when I show up at a first birth, and I think, like, oh, well, the pattern is blank, and the mom is being really mellow, and I think, oh, maybe she's just, like, a mellow laborer.
Right.
And then I'm there for two more days, and I look back and think, why did I think that? Like, that's the exception, not the rule.
Right.
So.
Well, but it's also, like we were talking about earlier, it's really hard. It's really hard. It's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in some scenarios, you know. It's like when you least
uh-huh.
expect it. So,
right.
You know, sometimes it's better to go over and check or not. But, yeah, when you end up sitting there and then 2 days later she's really in labor, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, that's what wasn't happening 2 days ago.
And that's what I think the beauty of the, you know, a multip birth is that even if they, what am I trying to say? I mean, the worst case scenario with those births is typically that you miss it, and they
right.
usually are fine and whatever, and as opposed to the other worst case scenario where they think it's too early, which is what the first thing you said, which was, you know,
right.
that's sort of just way more challenging on the support team for sure, and also typically on the mom in different ways, you know, more physically challenging
right.
in a lot of ways. Maybe not as mentally challenging, but maybe
right.
both. I don't know. I'll report back if I have a fast second birth someday.
Well, and like I've said a million times, it's like the statistics or the, you know, it's so possible. Like that's the likelihood of
right.
that is so good. Actually, that makes me think of another variation, which I think is kind of cool to talk about because I've had a couple this year, are women whose actually first births I've attended who had relatively fast first births. So to me, that means I think they were like 7-8 hours.
Sure.
And then with their second births, they've been a little bit longer. And so, you know, that hasn't been bad, but like the call of when to go over, you know, like you could say maybe I was there a little bit early, but you know, you only have the history to go on that you have.
Right.
And I think my general rule, like I've already said, is if someone's had a baby and their water's open, that you should be ready to go or you should be close because, I mean, unless they're not contracting at all. But even if they're in like sort of early-ish labor with water's open, like, it's going to be sooner than later, most likely.
Yeah.
Oh, we try, right? We try to have like rules and guideposts and all these things, which actually is kind of funny, I think.
It is funny. Oh, yeah.
I feel like there was something else I was going to say. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have a nice mix coming up. Oh, no, hold on.
Where'd you go?
Sorry.
Hello?
Hi, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
I was just saying I have a nice mix in 2018 of first-time moms and not first-time moms.
Right.
And I think that'll be fun for me.
It is nice to have a mix. I feel like I have a lot of first-time moms, but... I know what other element I wanted to talk about, which I think you deal with as well there too, which is being a far distance from people. Like, oh my gosh, does that not change it totally? It's like a whole different animal to care for someone that's more, you know, 2 hours away, let's say, or more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's far.
I mean, it's just like this whole subset of midwifery that I think, you know, like even in our school, it deserves some attention as its own thing, like how to care for women really far away. One of the births I missed recently was really far away. So, I mean, that's not, I guess that's surprising, especially when someone's not having their first baby. But then again, there were a bunch that were far that I did not miss. So I tend to be over conservative with the ones that are farther away, which I know you can appreciate.
Right. Yeah. I have like a less far away client base now, although I did just have one that was 45-ish minutes away. And I had one last summer that was like an hour and 15 minutes away.
Right.
And yeah, I feel like I'm the same way, just wanting to be more conservative and having a plan in place of like, you know, maybe they have a relative nearby and you can just hang out at their house if it's still early once you actually get there, you know?
Right. Right.
Or
so you need a plan.
Yeah, or I'll say, hey, I think I'm going to head your way if that sounds okay, and just let me know, you know, at blank time if
right.
you want me to head right there or head to a coffee shop or whatever it is.
Right. Well, and I think it's worth, well, I know you probably say this too, that when I'm working with people or they even want to hire me and they're far away, I try to be really honest about that. It's like, hey, look, it would be a lot easier on you too if you
mm-hmm.
hire someone closer. Like, I won't lie, it can be really stressful for the mom too to know that, like,
sure.
A, someone's pretty far away, and B, she's really got to be on top of, like, anticipating the call and such if she wants you there, which, you know, I can appreciate as someone that's birthed. Like, I hate making that call, which is why I make you come and stay with me. Making the call is, like, the hardest part.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, like, it's not always the best scenario, really, and that's why we're creating or trying to help create more midwives. I think every community needs a local midwife. I love the women that I care for far away, but I do not enjoy being the traveling midwife. I think the local midwife is where it's at. And
I agree.
The more we can do of that, then like the less stress around all of it, you know? I mean, the likelihood of you not being available to a mom that's 5 minutes away or whatever is very low.
Oh my gosh. And that's like such a different feeling than driving really far and wondering what's going on and thinking like, I wonder if the baby's out already. Maybe I should call and see. Or like wondering, are they going to call me if the baby comes out while I'm driving 100 miles an hour?
Oh yeah. It's happened twice in the last month to me.
Yeah. I mean, one of the first births that I went to with you, not the first one, I think it was the seventh one, was one where you were down in Phoenix and I was in Sedona and I got there before you, but that mom didn't call till like the
right.
last moment, gave us no heads up.
Right.
And I will never forget that feeling of like, do I even know where I'm driving right now? Like,
right.
It's dark and it's just like such a, you know, and I still tried to do my like grounding and centering and not bring crazy energy into the house. But I would certainly be lying if I said I went in like super calm.
Well, right. And I think that's, you know, that brings me to like a bigger picture point, which I think you'll agree with. And I don't know if people listening will agree or not. I mean, depending on their midwives or whatever. But I mean, ultimately, babies choose who they want there. That is my belief.
Yeah.
So unless you're being a negligent midwife, which I don't know anyone like this. So kind of like this other angle of like, you know, being like, oh, you missed a birth. Like you must be a terrible midwife. It's like, no, I mean, unless, you know, again, you're being negligent and you're home like drinking or something, which I don't know any midwife to do, like things happen. Like, you know, if you lived in a big city, even you could be stuck in traffic. There could be a snowstorm.
Yeah.
Like we have to trust ultimately that whoever is supposed to be there will be there and that we're not saving anyone anyway. And again, I think babies really strongly make their choice. You know, that's the big picture, I think. So as much as I stress about it and, you know, you're en route and you already hear the baby crying in the background on the phone, it's like, okay, this is fine. This is the plan here. Like there's no arguing with what is. This is the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I feel like the prep prenatally is so helpful, especially for like a partner, hopefully be on board 110% with like birth is normal. You know, if you're like the one or two in 100 that has a birth getting missed, like you will be fine. Don't freak out.
Yeah, and the preparation around the placenta birth, which is probably another phone call. But I know that's something we've both been trying to do more for all reasons, not even just, you know, possibly missing a birth, women should really take responsibility for this part of their birth. And especially if you're not there and, you know, they feel like they don't know what happens next. Well, mm-hmm. you know, it's birthing a placenta into a bowl, whether the midwife's there or not. You don't need someone there to do that. You know, and that's, I think, something I'm always thinking about how to do better with, so people feel really in control of that part, whether I'm there or not.
Totally. Yeah, that's why having, like, great photos and videos of that part of it, I think, is high on our list of things to get more of.
For sure. For sure. Well, as I walk around my neighborhood, I'm reminded of that really nice birth a couple of years ago we had that you came to visit for, that was like literally within walking distance, and how nice that was, and how we would have totally missed it if it hadn't been, probably.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So ode to the community midwife. That's the goal for the next couple of years, is to have a midwife where women want one, so that if they want one, nobody is rushing around and driving more than 15 minutes. That would be an awesome thing.
Ooh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, neighborhood midwife.
Neighborhood midwife.
Yeah, my apprentice right now lives 45 minutes away from me, and that's what we keep saying is, I can't wait till she, because there was a midwife in her area who is no longer practicing. So there really isn't someone that direction, and I'm more than happy to have, just support her and in bringing midwifery to that area. I would rather not drive there.
Right, I know.
She makes a commute a few times a week to come toward me, and it's a lot of driving. So.
Totally. I mean, I drove an hour to my preceptor's house in my apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe this is another phone call, but I don't believe in competition as far as all this goes, because there's not enough midwives, and I would love to not drive 2 hours in each direction. I don't really want to do that. I don't really need to do that. Again, I love these women, but I would be way happier for everyone if there was someone closer.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Cool.
Well, I'm back at my house.
I'm headed home too, so awesome. We'll have a good Christmas Eve day.
Sounds good. What should we talk about next time? Should we talk about our budding photography interests?
Yeah, we totally can. But also, anybody listening, I know there are people listening to these or getting on board with this being a new spinoff for us, but we'd love to hear your feedback. So you can find us on Facebook or Instagram or email us through the Indie Birth site and let us know if you have ideas or things you want to hear us chat about. Or anything in general, feedback is always welcome, since you never know where these things are getting. Any last announcements, Margo, or things people should check out for the week?
We have 2 scholarships available in the very short term for our 2018 Indie Birth Conference and Retreat. So people should go apply for those if they are interested in them.
And where do they go for that?
That is... just go to indiebirthconference.com, and then one of the tabs is scholarships.
Awesome.
It's super easy to find. Click on read about the 2 options, and we'll be announcing that, I think I said January 24th, which is the day after I get to Arizona. So.
Okay, awesome. And we haven't really announced it yet publicly, but Elder Midwife Gail Hart will be at our retreat, so we need to add that to the website. But that's another awesome reason to come or apply for a scholarship, to be able to sit with women, you know, of all generations, essentially, at this retreat.
Yes, and we're adding cool things every week to the roster for that weekend. We are doing lots of fun collecting of goodies to give attendees in, like, a fun swag bag.
Nice.
So really are trying hard to, you know, we didn't just like set it and forget it. Like, oh, there's the schedule. Those people are cool. Slap them on. This is a very intentional and continues to be an intentional structuring of the weekend so that there's something for everyone, whether you're a mom or a doula or a birth photographer or a midwife or whatever you are. right. maybe you're all of those things. And so that it's not just, and maybe next year we'll just call it a retreat. for simplicity's sake, because we really want you to leave feeling supported and nourished and all the things that we try to do for our clients every day. We want to try and give you an opportunity and ourselves an opportunity to really take care of ourselves too, not just with our brains learning cool new things, which there will be plenty of that, but also, you know, spending some time in the sauna and canoeing and watching a movie together, a birth documentary, and, you know, taking care of ourselves in those fun ways, laughing and eating.
Having these kind of talks, you know, like these kind of informal talks around a fire that aren't lectures and aren't presentations, just like, let's chat.
Connect. S'mores.
Cool. S'mores.
Oh. All right.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you later.
Yeah.